Listening
to tell me something weird. This is a weekly podcast
in which I,
Eric X. Johnson, dog owner, anxious about movie night.
I feel good about movie. Eric feels
just
good
the
about
mechanics,
movie night.
Perhaps.
It's coming along.
I don't see a popcorn machine here.
Not yet. It's coming. Eventually.
Tell a story.
About a Ford Pinto with wings. To my co-host,
Jody Arnold, who's going to talk about the classic old missing adult Hispanic man situation.
Oh, the old classic. Real quick, top of your head, who's the dude in Machete?
Oh, the actor. That he's in a bunch of stuff?
Yeah, I can't remember his name.
And he often just goes by his last name.
Hey, Merle's on. Yeah, thanks, bud. Yeah, you got
Danny
him.
Danny Trejo.
Trejo.
Yes, this is a Trejo. Yeah. This is the story of Danny Trejo gone missing.
I've been trying to think of his name since last night because I watched that Rick and Morty episode where he does the voice of a character called the Jaguar.
That's funny.
I couldn't remember his name. That's a great episode.
I won't watch it. I tried watching again. Oh, yeah, so I'm going to talk about some... not a missing white girl, which is, I shouldn't even joke about that considering my family situation, but I'm not going to talk about the classic missing white girl. I'm going to talk about a case that cases like this often just get dismissed, you know, especially this guy's history. So I'm going to talk about that. And let me tell you, I tried to watch The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt again. You know where it lost me? It lost me when she's in the bathroom. Oh, water. Oh, a hand dryer. And it's like, I just want to punch this girl in the face. I'm sorry.
Isn't that like the first episode?
Yeah. It's like 20 minutes in.
We got to get past that.
Just
skip ahead like 4 or 5 episodes.
Tyler told me that her encounters with technology, he said, get sort of old.
Well, yeah.
And I was instantly like not finding that funny. You know, like, it just wasn't funny to me.
You just got to get to John Hamm.
Is he in it regularly?
Semi-regularly.
I did find the part funny when they were on the Today Show, and, like, the one woman was in the cult willingly. Like, Matt Lauer's just interviewing all these women, and, like, one went in there because he said he had baby rabbits or something in his car, the guy. And I found the remix thing, which was kind of like the hide your kids, hide your wife with
yeah.
That was great. And then it just got to this girl.
The line I remember from that is like, I was out back cutting up bike tires for my grandson.
I mean, that stuff is hilarious. But I also have this prejudice of the memories of this woman who's the lead being in... The Office, and I didn't like her in The Office, the U.S. version of The Office.
Yeah, why not?
Her character, she was just sort of like a, she reminded me of like just a real pushover kind of in The Office. I didn't like her in the show. I don't know why. Why did you like her in the show?
I mean, I like her as an actress. I think she's like, she's got some.
Well, that's because she has... an adorable quality, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, she does. Which fits with the Kimmy Schmidt role really well.
Yeah, but like for me, I don't know why that just doesn't resonate with me. I need somebody who's got a little bit more I need somebody who's a little edgier or something like that. Like, her over optimism and stuff just doesn't make me laugh or anything. I mean,
yeah, it's like she's got this, she's in a terrible situation and she just has this sunshiny attitude that's just totally insufferable.
Here's what's funny is I feel like I should be the one that likes that show and you should not.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I don't know why that.
No,
why
isn't
it's the
that
other
weird?
Way.
Yeah.
There has to be some quality about it that has made that flip, because like theme wise, it should be more you.
Yes.
But I find it totally hilarious.
Well, and I will just say straight up, I know a lot of guys who find it totally hilarious, and I think they all have some kind of crush on her.
I don't know what you're trying to say there.
I don't know what I'm trying to say either. It's just all specs. It's all specs. Yeah, so tell me about this cleanse. Guess what? Yeah. I know somebody else who was on the cleanse at the same time.
Oh, really? The same one?
Yes.
All right.
And I would see pictures, still yummy, from his wife now. She'd be like, not as good as yesterday, but still yummy. And it was the same food.
Yeah.
It?
So this is a, it's like an Ayurvedic cleanse where you eat this Indian dish called, and I'm going to really like, you know what? I'm going to talk about it how I know it.
Yeah, please.
Which is going to be like a real everyman approach.
You are the everyman.
I've always said that. So you eat this Indian dish called khichdi,
mm-hmm.
Which is basically just, it's rice and beans, with a bunch of vegetables in it.
What kind of beans?
Like, mung beans.
Oh, what, I'm familiar with those.
Why, you're looking all like, you're wrinkling up your nose and you're all just like,
yeah.
I know mung
I don't know
beans.
If I love the texture of those especially. There's a little different texture to them, right?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, they're not the worst. Yeah. Just put a lot of salt on them. Can you do that?
There's some salt in it.
Okay.
Not a lot. Very little, as a matter of fact.
I got low blood pressure, though. I need to eat salt. Anyway. I'm already negotiating the cleanse with you.
Yeah. So, you know, it's 5 days long. You eat the same dish for every meal 5 days in a row. And, I mean, with, you know, maybe like slight variations of it, and you can, there are a couple of things you can add or subtract, you know, to... It, but ultimately, it tastes pretty much the same every time. And it's interesting. Like, the first time, like, for meal number one. The other thing I should mention is no coffee.
And no booze.
No booze. Yep. So you're basically...
Tea?
No tea. Well, you can have... The one beverage you can have besides water is, like, a little hot water... with a little honey and lemon in it.
It feels like this kind of cleanse should be allowing for kombucha.
Well, I'd be out on that, because kombucha is like the worst thing in the world.
I know. Well, that whole fungus thing, I can't deal with it. Anyway, what's the quantity too?
As much as you want. So the idea is you don't want to be hungry, mm-hmm. and you want to, like, it's a very nutritious dish, you know, like it's beans and rice and vegetables. Like, I mean, it really is, you know, like you're not shorting yourself on calories or nutrition. So it was interesting, because I, you know, like when I approached it, I was, that's what you get for playing with the dog with tattoo hand. Yeah.
So, tattoo hand.
Yeah. Jody's got tattoo hand.
Yep. Tattoo leg, tattoo hands.
Yep. So when this idea was first pitched to me, I was just like, oh man, I don't want to be hungry for a whole week and have to work and all that stuff. And it was like, no. You eat as much as you want. you know, it's, but you're supposed to prepare the meals fresh. Which
how's that work at work?
Well, we basically what we just did was just made like a big batch in the morning,
yeah,
and just put it in container, like, you know, insulated containers, so it was still hot when you had it for lunch.
So this is requires, you know, quite a bit of prep.
It's actually not that bad, you know. I mean, it's probably it probably takes a half hour, 35 minutes to whip up a batch.
Okay.
You know, so it's not too bad. Chopping all the vegetables up ahead of time really helped, you know, and that's probably the most tedious part about the whole thing, you mm-hmm. know, but other than having to eat the same thing for every meal for 5 days.
Yeah.
But on the first day and the last day, you also get to have a handful of nuts and a small piece of fruit. And so today I ate an apple, and it was the most delicious thing I've ever put in my mouth.
You might want to reconsider that. So, okay, so there is an element of, let me guess, there is probably an element of appreciating flavors and like whole foods and cleansing yourself of like your reliance on a bunch of added crap. Did you feel like,
yeah, no, I think that's, to me, that's the biggest value of the whole thing.
Cause like eating an apple on most days might be good, but your mind's not blown by it. Right.
Exactly. Where today it was truly like a borderline transcendental experience. That's going a little far, but it was delicious.
And what kind of nuts? Almonds?
I had pecans and cashews and almonds, yeah. Mm. You know, just like a just a handful.
Yeah.
Just grabbed a handful.
Were they salted?
I don't remember.
Oh, God.
No, I don't think so. I don't know. They were in some, I mean, there's some prepackaged thing, you know, like a mixed nuts bag.
D's nuts.
Yeah, exactly. D's. You can find them at Woodman's, right next to Montucky Cold Snacks. D's nuts.
That's right. Montucky Cold Snacks, a proud sponsor of Tell Me Something Weird.
Which I'm going to have one tomorrow.
Yes. Yeah. Are you having a Montucky?
Yeah, I'll probably have a Montucky and maybe something else as well.
I would say you should go down to the monk or something like that.
Yeah, I was thinking about that.
Get a. If I didn't have this funeral tomorrow, I'd join you. I got adult things to do.
Yeah, you got grown up stuff. I'm gonna go have fun.
Yeah.
So the big thing is, and I don't want to gloss over. You just said you're going to a funeral. I don't
want to
gloss over.
No,
that.
I want you to. I don't want to dwell on that one bit.
Forget that I brought it up again.
Yeah.
So. The biggest thing for me was giving up caffeine, because I don't drink a ton of coffee, but I drink it every day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like
it's a ritual.
Yeah,
right?
No matter what, and there is something to the ritual that I like, and I don't think coffee is. I mean, there are always, you know, conflicting studies in the headlines, but I think ultimately, I think the consensus is that coffee is either not bad for you, or, you know, maybe is like positive,
like red wine.
Yeah, exactly. You know, but of course, all things in moderation. Mm-hmm. And I think in our lives, we have a tendency to go a little crazy with stuff, and then we end up training our palates that we need certain things. And
you're talking about everybody, or just you and I?
Yeah,
because I was like. I mean, I'm like, go crazy. I mean, because that's correct. I don't have a whole lot of gray area.
Yeah, I'm like with food, with things that give me pleasure, it's like all or nothing.
It's hard to shut it off.
Yeah, yeah. I really have a hard time. Like a big thing for me. Well, like I would say. Alcohol was, you know, has on and off been a little bit of an issue. I've never had I don't think I've ever had like crippling alcoholism or anything, but like it's easy to be dependent on it,
mm-hmm.
you know, to be craving it at certain times of the day.
And it's a very culturally we're saturated in this culture of drinking anyway.
Yeah. Or you want to do something social, you're drinking.
Yeah.
You know, like.
Yeah.
But also, like, things like ice cream.
Candy corn.
And candy corn.
The accessibility of candy corn.
Oh, yeah. But, like.
Ice cream. I love
just,
that.
Oh, man. I just love it. you know, and.
How's that Ramones?
It's good. They don't make their own stuff there, which I guess I was a little bummed out by.
So Olson's is more authentic.
Olson's is great. There's a place in La Crosse called The Pearl that makes all their ice cream right on, you know, like right on site. That place is phenomenal.
You in La Crosse.
La Crosse is kind of cool.
You kind of got a, yeah, you like.
Kind of like a little mini boner for La Crosse.
You do.
A little half chub for La Crosse.
Speaking of half chubs, I went to see Rocky Horror Picture Show last night.
Also, I just want to say I feel good, but I'm ready for it to be over. The
you, yes.
Yeah. I do feel better, but you know, like it's good. I think it is a good thing to do to kind of put things in perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I'm ready to eat something else now. Sandy and I have been planning our weekend meals already. You know, like, it's like, we're going to make tacos, we're going to make hamburgers.
Yeah, I was wondering if you're going to go, you like to go to the Mexican restaurant, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm a big fan of Muang Thai as well.
That must be over on the west side.
Yeah.
Yeah, you guys on the west side have your own
stuff going on.
Do you go like
there?
The Varsity Club?
Fuck no, I've never been in there.
That whole is an affront to me. That whole idea of that place, it's like they don't have the balls to be Hooters.
Right.
So then they've got to do like two lame steps down and just have like busty women in like referee shirts.
Yeah.
I don't even ever want to go in there.
No, I'm, yeah, I'm not on board.
I mean, the sports bar thing.
But speaking of... trying to think of how to phrase this. I was going to try to turn bus into Rocky Horror.
Speaking of, well, you see a lot of, you see some
You
cleavage.
Can tell. I've been doing podcasts for almost 4 years. You can see how smooth I've got at those transitions.
Yeah, I was sad you weren't finished with your cleanse talking because my half chub one was better. But I'm glad we got to the down to the nuts and bolts of the cleanse.
Yes.
But yes, we went to see Rocky Horror last night, which you guys went to last year.
Yeah.
Same production.
Yeah.
Same cast.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, awesome.
It was all...
That was a really good cast.
Yeah. The person... Well, Misty Lovely played Dr. Frankenfurter back in 2005 or something. And she showed me a photo of herself as Dr. Frankenfurter. And well... My only critique is just, let's just be honest here. I'm going to show you this photo, and then you're going to tell me if you agree that she is a much more fabulous. I mean.
Wow.
That's a pretty, you know, Tim Curry. Okay. All right. I'm just going to say, if we had the same cast, then you're Dr. Frankenfurter, the main character.
Yep.
That's his name, right? Her name. Dr.
Frankenfurter, yes.
Yeah, okay. So, in the original, Tim Curry is a very slight...
Right, and this one is a little more...
stuffed into a corset.
Yeah, a little barrel-chested for a corset. But a great singer.
And could bring it.
And right, yeah. So
yeah, but she showed me her photo. I was like, wow... Now, I didn't see her perform, but that visually feels a little bit more like, you know, what I was thinking in my brain. So, yes, but in complete confidence in, like, that show requires a level of confidence to be walking around and basically next to nothing, right?
Right.
I mean, his ass was hanging out most of the time. Yeah. But it was so fun. So, yes.
But I thought if indeed it is the same cast, the Brad and Janet that they had were like spot on.
Completely spot on. As was your riffraff, this really tall, skinny guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, it's, yeah. D told me it was the same cast. Everything was the same. So then I think it just made it easier. They had a lot of other shows going on to kind of come back together and do this, you know, and they didn't have to start from scratch again. So I messaged you yesterday because I saw that there were tickets for sale for Rocky Horror, and I happened to have some free time. I wasn't working last night. And so I said, hey, you want to go to Rocky Horror, to Tyler? And he's like, I have heard that there is some sort of process for indoctrinating virgins to attending a Rocky Horror, and they're going to single me out and all these things. And he was quite anxious about it, like, and not knowing what to do and when to do it. So I message you just to ask about the, if they're going to single him out of the audience somehow, because I think they do that in places. Like if you say you're a virgin when they ask, I think they might do things to you.
I've heard that. I've never actually seen it happen.
Yeah. So, okay, I reassure him. Well, then I said, okay, I got some tickets. And I was not convinced that he was really that excited about it. He was going to go, but he was very worried. I don't know what to do and when. And so then when you get your program and there's like a thing in there that says all the callbacks, and he felt much better about it.
Yeah, that's right. They give you kind of like a cue sheet.
Yeah, because you get to yell slut and asshole like a lot of the night.
Right.
Was that on yours too?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, that's just part of the Rocky Horror experience.
Yeah. Well, they said some of them were, there's some deviations, I guess.
Oh, okay.
You know, I don't know. I've never been to a live one.
They do it at the movies too, or at the, you know, when they do a screening, you know, there's the same audience participation kind of stuff.
Yeah. I've only watched it at in private.
What are you doing when you watch it? Is you in your bedroom alone with Rocky Horror? Whatever, you know?
Don't you feel like though, there's some part of it, it's like an acid trip. I mean, if you're really trying to connect all the dots right away, you just sort of have to let it happen, right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean by that?
Yes, right, yeah.
I mean, the transitions are kind of goofy, and now we're doing this, and, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, okay. Did you do the time warp at the end?
Oh, totally.
Yeah, so do we. I was really proud of Tyler. I thought, wow, no, really this guy.
Into it?
Yeah.
Nice.
I wasn't sure, you know. So,
it's a fun show. I really enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would go to it again. I'd probably wait. I mean, I would probably go to this. It was fun enough where, like, if it was the same cast next year, I would go to it again.
Yeah, I totally would, especially now 2 years removed. Like, it would be super fresh again, I think.
Did you buy those prop bags?
Yeah.
He didn't want to do the prop bag. It was just a little too much. So then the lady is like prop bag shaming us at the ticket. Did you see the prop bags? And I'm like, mm-hmm. trying to make it sound like there's some reasonable excuse why we wouldn't buy them, you know, because it seemed like it would just enhance the thing. Although I had a hard time keeping up with all the callbacks anyway, so I probably would have.
You just follow the, you know, you just watch what the people around you are doing, you know.
And there were a lot of trucks there, and there were a lot of dudes there, and I have no clue if they knew what they were getting into.
I sort of hope they didn't.
I know, because it looked like it was like the girls were like, it's couples night, girls choice, you know.
Sure, yeah.
And like, they probably... Right,
we'll go in our work boots and our t-shirts and our camo hats.
Tucked in. I'm familiar with this archetype. Yeah. You know, tucked in t-shirts and stuff.
Right.
That's how
you dress up.
Yeah. You tuck it in.
You just tuck it in.
But you know, these women are probably, there was a contingency there, I bet, that has been to Scooters once and was like, oh yeah, we're going to have a great time at Rocky Horror. You know, we saw Drag Queen one time.
Right.
You know, this is going to be crazy. Yeah. So anyway, but anything else going on?
No. You want me to tell you something weird?
Yeah.
Henry Smolinski was born in 1933.
Thank God. Henry Smolinski.
Yep.
Okay, well, that came right up. I just have to get this in me. I mean... Just hold on, won't you? Okay.
He was one of eight children in a Polish family living in America, in Chicago.
Oh, this is no, like my...
Wow, cut all that out.
Come on.
Cuyahoga, Ohio. Jeez.
Jeez, I was going to say, that's like my grandparents.
Okay.
But now, not at all. Was he a Polish Jew?
Don't know.
Was he tight with his money? That might help you.
Well, we'll see. he went to Northrop Institute of Technology's Aeronautical Engineering School and went to work for North American Aviation as a structural engineer working on jet engine and aircraft design.
Whoa.
In 1959, he joined Rocketdyne as a project engineer, and he worked on their missile development and aerospace programs. So he worked there for about 10 years, and then he left to start his own company with a friend of his named Hal Blake. And they started a company called Advanced Vehicle Engineers in Van Nuys, California. Van Nuys? Van Ness?
N-U-Y-S. I've always wondered that.
Van Ness, I think. California.
Van Nuys.
Croissant? Jacques Cousteau. Baguette. They started the company in 1971. Expressly to design and build a flying car.
My kids just said to me they're so excited that I'll be alive hopefully in 80 years because there will be flying cars. Like they brought that home as some kind of fact from school.
That's pretty optimistic, though, don't you think?
Yes. I mean, on all fronts. Number one, that there'll be a planet.
Right. Number two, that you're going to be on it.
Good burn.
Well, I think...
That was really good, and I was totally walked into it.
Well, I think, you know, medical technology's come a long way. You know, it's fine.
Shut
and
up.
You might make it another 70, 75.
I might.
Yeah. 80's a lot.
Oh, I thought you meant another 70 years, but you mean 70 total.
Oh, anyways. So AVE Miser was the name of their prototype. And they built two. So the idea was to take a regular car and a plane, modify both so a person could drive the car to an airport, fit the car to the airframe, take off on the runway, and land at another airstrip, detach the airframe, and drive the car away. So the airframe has to stay at airports, but the car just drives like a normal car.
Do you see any real practical... I mean, is it that big of a deal to get a ride to the airport?
I think it's, you know, I mean, not a ride to the airport, but like, have you ever been on vacation somewhere and had to like...
Well, that's true enough.
Or gone on business somewhere, you know, and you need a way to get around. And... You know, you can fly a few hundred miles and have your own car.
Right on. You
know? So, in the 1960s, Americans were in love with huge-ass cars.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all car makers were making here. And people wanted, consumers wanted something a little smaller and cheaper. And so the Japanese started importing cars, and which caused them, the American companies, to start losing sales. So they decided they needed to find a way to compete. Ford president Lee Iacocca wanted to design a car that weighed less than 2,000 pounds and would cost less than $2,000. Enter the Ford Pinto, September 11th, 1970.
It's always a good day.
It actually comes up, I think, one more time in here.
Oh, my God. This day.
So they called it, their slogan for it was the Little Carefree Car. And it was designed to compete against the Beetle, the Civic, and the Accord.
Those existed that far back,
yeah.
Huh? The Civic and the Accord. Yeah.
It started in September 1970. By January of 1971, the Pinto had already sold over 100,000 units. And by 1974, they were making 544,000 a year.
Whoa.
Now, pre-gas, before the gas crisis, in the late 70s, mm-hmm. you know, like the Jimmy Carter era, Jimmy Carter's problem.
Gas, I mean, for our millennials.
Right.
We got to clarify a little more.
Yeah, look it up on Wikipedia. Or what? They're probably onto something new. Wikipedia is probably like old and outdated now.
Right.
So gas was like 30 cents a gallon back then. So
that's a dream.
Yeah, isn't it like?
Mm-hmm.
Because what is it now? Like $3?
Yeah, I remember 99 cent gas.
Yeah, I do remember when I first got my driver's license, it was under a dollar.
Yeah.
I remember it cresting a dollar being a big deal.
Yeah.
So American engineers were not well practiced at designing cars to be super lightweight. So the little carefree car didn't have a big heavyweight bumper like a lot of cars in the era did. And there was very little reinforcement between the back panels and the gas tank. So when rear-ended the Ford Pinto, the gas tank of the Ford Pinto could be driven forward and punctured by the bolts on the differential, which would cause it to leak and become a little drivey bomb. Now, the other thing is, you know, these cars were made of lighter weight, lower gauge materials. So in a crash, the materials would like crumple up and would cause the doors to jam.
Oh my God. And they weren't good looking cars either.
Well, right. If we're going to get right down to the real problem. I don't know. I kind of like them, but they were, you know, I mean, they would rupture the gas tank if you were rear-ended, and then you couldn't get out. I mean, so you were like, you'd get hit, and then you couldn't escape your own vehicle.
I mean, it would probably explode.
Right. So in 1977, Mother Jones Magazine.
Well, those are a bunch of hippies.
published a story claiming that Ford was fully aware of the problems. And in fact, I mean, can you imagine that? Like a company being our cars kill people.
But it's not like a ton of people.
Right. Not like all. It's not going to be like all or even most.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know.
I can imagine that.
Well, we'll use Ford's own words to to describe this problem.
Please.
So they, in Mother Jones magazine, they published a memo that was circulated to senior Ford management. So they expected total unit sales of 11 million Pintos. The total cost to modify the fuel tank would cost $11 a car. So recall would cost $121 million. So, you know, like, so they're just like, you know what? We did this wrong. We need to own this, bring them all back in, and fix them up right. Because what price could you put on a human life?
Don't lure me in. This is not what happened. They were like, well.
They were like, wait a second. We have a problem with exploding cars.
Who doesn't?
Let's bring in the accountants. You know who can fix this? A bunch of bean counters. So they use a mathematical formula to crunch some numbers. So
sure.
They figured there would be 2,100 probable accidents that could rupture the gas tank. And that would maybe result in 180 burn deaths. So the cost, if the cost per accident were $200,000 per death, $67,000 per serious injury, and $700 per bombed out vehicle, that would be a total payout, if they could settle out of court, a total payout of $49.5 million.
So that's a lot cheaper.
Letting 180 people burn to death in their own cars would save Ford $70 million.
Did Ralph Nader get on board against this? That he was this kind of stuff was his jam, you know.
Oh yeah, totally. So and they kept building those cars exactly the same way.
You're kidding
until
me.
Until that story broke. Like, they knew this was happening and they were just like, "Yeah, well,
couldn't they just modify the new ones at least?"
Well, $11 a car.
Well, yeah, but just going forward.
Yeah, the 120.
You could charge a little more. Charge $20
more.
Really,
we're trying to turn a profit here. This is business, right? It sounds like maybe you need to go work for Toyota.
Where's their offices?
Somewhere far, far away. So after that story ran, they were like, oh, okay, yeah, maybe we should fix it. So in 1978, they had a recall, and a plastic protective shield was installed between the fuel tank and the differential bolts, and there was another one that sat between the fuel tank and the right rear shock absorber. So the result was there were actual, like, criminal charges filed, there were recalls, like, it was just an absolute total shit show. But it was super light. So if you were going to saw up a Cessna Skymaster and made it to a car and make it fly, the Pinto was actually a pretty good option. So the Skymaster's cabin and front engine were, it's a twin engine plane. There's actually two, there's a propeller on the front and the back. It's kind of a weird looking, plane. Yeah. So the front engine and the cabin are removed and bolted to the Pinto.
God, this just already feels nerve-wracking.
So the Pinto was backed into the airframe and four high-strength self-locking pins were used to hook everything together. The way you control this thing was that the ailerons, so that like the steering mechanism, like the left and right mechanism of the plane, or the rolling left and right, was operated by the steering wheel. And the elevator by pushing and pulling the steering wheel in and out. Now, pedals to control the rudder were also installed, and all of the flight controls inside the car.
Spit on.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
So all the controls were attached to the airframe via connections that ran underneath the driver's side of the car. The Pinto's dashboard was outfitted with flight instruments like airspeed and rate of climb gauges, an altimeter, directional gyro, fuel pressure gauges, a throttle, and radio navigational equipment.
All in a Pinto.
Yep.
You kind of love this. Do you kind of love this idea?
The Miser could use both the car engine and the aircraft engine during launch to shorten the takeoff. And once in the air, it had a cruising speed of 130 miles an hour, a range of 1,000 plus miles, and a ceiling of 12,000 feet.
Okay, can I ask what a normal plane ceiling is?
Well, like it really depends on the plane. You know, like a lot of that's in the neighborhood of a lot of like smaller single engine planes, like you know the little Cessnas or whatever. You know,
okay, like the ones that have a lot of problems.
What? Like what kind of problems?
Like falling on the ground.
I don't.
Like bing,
don't,
bang, boom.
I don't know why.
Bye, bye, mama.
I don't know why that would enter this story.
Okay. Yeah, so, surely this is going to have a good ending.
So the car has, you know, like much more powerful brakes than an airplane, so it could also land on a much shorter runway.
Yeah.
So
hypothetically.
So it can take off shorter, it can come to a stop shorter, you know, when it lands. So the first few test flights were conducted by a pilot by the name of Red Janicy, who in 1973 took the thing out on a test run, and one of the right wing strut mounting brackets failed shortly after takeoff. Now, Red, being an experienced pilot, knew that turning the craft would put too much stress on the wing and rip it right off. So he just aimed the thing straight down, put it into a dive, and ended up landing it safely in a bean field. Probably a Pinto bean field, right?
Those are down in Mexico.
Well, they grow in other places. And who says this is, well, this is California. I mean, that, you know, which isn't all that far away.
Sure, yeah.
So
some of the illegals came over to plant Pintos beans.
They probably were just seeking asylum.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Sorry, we're trying to be relevant and we're trying to be hip and cool.
Yeah.
So he landed safely in the bean field. He detached the airframe and actually drove the car back to the airport.
How long did it take to
detach? No, I'm sorry. He didn't detach it. He drove. Sorry. Airframe still attached to the airport.
Okay.
And
that must have been a sight.
Yeah, I'm sure. So the press ate it up, even though it didn't really work at first. Like, the press ate it up. Like, there's, you know, like, probably some noteworthy papers talked about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
probably.
Yeah. but
your evidence is compelling.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I put a lot of time and effort into tracking down all the different threads of a story, and I feel really good about this one. Galpin Ford of Sepulveda. Oh, which apparently is now known as North Hills, California, signed on to be the national distributor after one crash into a bean field.
Oh, my God.
So he went Smolinski went around taking this thing kind of on the road with, you know, sales pitches and press conferences. He promised that it was a simple vehicle. Quote, "Even a woman can easily put the two systems together or separate them without help."
Well, I can't say much for that because I can't even use my measuring app on my phone.
So you don't? Do you think you could put together the Miser and the Pinto?
No.
Without help?
Absolutely, I couldn't.
Well, interesting. What does that say about your gender?
I don't know if it's my gender.
Somebody's going to use that as a soundbite somewhere to hold against me.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. I shouldn't have just said that out loud.
Mm-hmm, you're...
Anyway, simple enough that... enough that a woman can put it together and affordable enough, roughly $15,000 at the full production price, to basically just like make it affordable for anyone to be a pilot.
Well, that's the other piece of this, is you don't just buy this car and be like, great, now I've got a plane, have at her. I mean, you have to know how to operate a plane before you can own this car.
Well, this might rewrite all the rules, you know?
Well, like, sometimes rules are not a bad thing.
Whose rules? Your rules?
Well, I know how you feel about rules, so I could instantly see you get pissed. You are just like a at-heart anarchist personality. Anyway.
In a press conference, Smolinski says that, well, so there are a bunch of reporters and they're asking technical questions. And a reporter for the Los Angeles Times said that the room was full of skeptics and some of the technical questions were not being fully answered. The AerCar people acknowledged there are problems, but, quote, we feel we have the answers. In the summer of 1973, the second prototype with a different engine was unveiled and taken for a series of taxi and test flights over a span of 3 months. And on September 11th, Janicy, the test pilot from the original one, was not available for a scheduled test flight. So Smolinski and Blake decided they were gonna do the test flight themselves. So they had apparently made an agreement with the airport that they would notify the airport manager before each flight so that he could get a hold of police and fire officials and, you know, like, to, you know, respond to the, I keep wanting to say inevitable disaster, but but that day, Smolinski didn't alert the airport. And after the Miser took off, the airport manager, Mac Grisham, ran over and tried to radio the aircraft. As he neared the tower, he heard the airport's crash horn shriek and turned to see a column of thick black smoke rising up from below where the Miser should have been.
Oh, no.
So the alarm had been hit by Danny Edwards, who is an air traffic controller. He was actually watching the Miser take off, and 2 minutes after takeoff, he saw the craft's right wing fold in. The Miser twisted and fell, with various parts and pieces flying off. There was another witness on his lawn that was watching and said he saw the craft fall, strike the top of a tree, and crash onto a pickup truck parked in the street and burst into flames.
Damn.
According to the local coroner, Smolinski and Blake were both killed instantly, although there's some debate about whether they died from crash injuries or from burns or from smoke inhalation. But the The NTSB, the National Transportation Safety Board, reported that this particular version of the Miser had several problems. For one, even though the Pinto was not a large car, the Miser was just too heavy. It was already over gross weight without passengers or fuel. They had found loose parts in an earlier problem that reared its head again.
Oh.
So, like, they're just, like, not tightening shit down before they, like, go and try to fly?
Come on.
But ultimately, a bad weld had resulted in the right wing strut attachment failing where it met the body panel of the Pinto. So, the inventor and the vice president of the company were killed in that crash. And so, the Miser project was abandoned. AVE as a company ended up shutting down. The Pinto, a car that is famous for being a death trap in the on the ground, also became a death trap in the air. But the reality is, this guy had a vision and he made this car fly.
Yeah, kind of.
Well, I mean, he got it in the air.
He did.
And one guy, one time, got it down safely.
Is there like an example of one of these at the Smithsonian or somewhere?
I don't know that either one of these survived. Well, that one didn't survive, but wouldn't I don't
know
if the other
prototype. Wouldn't it be great to see one?
It really would be awesome, you know. And there are pictures. There are some pictures, so
we can
definitely get some. Yeah,
post today.
I mean, it looks crazy and ridiculous, which it was crazy and ridiculous. But it actually it looks like it might work. You know? Like when you look at the pictures, like yeah, all right, it might work. But there are companies currently working on flying cars. Kind of with similar ideas.
I have zero interest in that, though.
Now would be better. I mean, I think, you know, now would, like, cars you could probably make lighter and safer.
Yeah.
Than you could back then. But, I don't know. I if they could make it practical and cheap enough, you know, I'd maybe.
I'm not confident in my abilities. I mean, I often tell people my driving record is not reflective of the terribleness of my driving.
Well, I mean, and you're a lady. How are you expected to be able to manage all those responsibilities
Doodads
of driving?
And
yeah, there's all sorts. And then you're going to add, like, a third dimension to it? Like, up and down?
Well, straight up, correct. I couldn't do it.
And just to be clear, that's not a gender thing. That's just...
No, that's just me.
Yeah.
I mean, who knows?
No, don't. You're not going to bait me into that.
I know. Damn it. Okay.
All right. Tell me about a missing person.
Yeah. The story keeps collapsing on me. I don't know if it's like if I just don't scroll after a certain point. It just kept going, oh, snap. Reload, then I hit reload and it won't reload, so then I gotta find it again. Okay. Well, most every time I believe I have ever talked about a missing persons case, it has involved a white girl.
Yes, and at least one time I told a missing persons case about a white dude.
Yeah, oh my God, you did.
The Matamoros, it turned out to be like a...
The Hell Ranch?
Yeah.
Yeah. Still remember. That was one of my favorites. Didn't I give you that book?
Yeah, I still have it here somewhere.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's sitting right over on the table over that way,
yeah,
right on the top.
Hell Ranch. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. You didn't actually see it, did you? You're turning your head and you didn't see it. But then you pretended like you did,
yeah,
just
I
so
did.
We could move on.
I
okay.
just
all right. I just wanted to see what was going on.
My neck isn't good right now, so anyway. All right, let's get back into the scheme of things here. So, yes, I I generally, because that's what the media picks up on and everything else, right?
Right. There's a book that I really love called, well, there's a website called FARC.
Yeah, you've told me about this.
Yeah, and I won't get into what it all is, but there's a book out there by the founder of that website called It's Not News, It's FARC. And there's a whole chapter about, it's basically the whole book covers bad habits of the media, you know, he can explain it way more eloquently than I can, but there's a chapter that explains the whole phenomenon of media honing in on missing white girl problem or, you know, like cases.
Yeah, well, I won't get into it because, of course, personally, I've been experiencing that, but also my family case is very weird. But yes, if there's just a missing, more of like a, let's say, a classic missing case, there's not murder and everything else.
Right.
Yes, that's completely correct. So,
and just, I mean, quickly, I can't imagine anyone who's interested in that case hasn't been glued to the internet, but are there any updates?
Well, yeah. So the case is the Jamie Kloss missing persons case. She's the number one missing person in the country as reported by the FBI. So she's their number one. The reward for information leading to her just went up to $50,000 today. So it was at 25 grand. And then Genio, which is the company that my cousin and her husband worked for, doubled it. So they took a mattress out of the house just a few days ago as additional evidence to look at. There are some cars of interest. If you go to the FBI's website or Barron County Sheriff's website, you can see the cars. One is an orange Challenger, which might have been cleared because I think there was somebody who worked at the plant that drove on that highway. And just, you know, plus an orange Challenger would be a really ballsy car to be committing crimes in.
Right.
And the other was some sort of a black SUV thing that they have the specs on. There was a weird story floating around about a man at a gas station, a Senex in Barron, a few weeks ago.
I had heard about that.
That Radar Online story.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Radar is a questionable website, and they pay for their tips and everything else.
Right. So, right, you always have to take that into consideration when you're reading stuff.
Well, and the guy, you can look up the article if you're listening and want to chase that down, but the one thing that was weird was the guy who, like, was saying this weird stuff to the woman at the gas station, was talking about the Jacob Wetterling case. Like, do you think they know who did it? And it's like, yeah, we all fucking know who did it.
Well, yeah, now we do, for sure.
Yeah, so that kind of makes me wonder.
That red flags it a little bit, yeah.
You know, it's like, okay, you know, so anyway, yeah, that's where we're at with that. And the funeral's tomorrow, and so that's where we're at with that. So let's talk about this guy named Boom Boom. Nickname Boom Boom.
Boom Boom.
Yeah. Raymond Boom Boom Ocasio.
All right. I'm in.
Yeah.
I am. Yeah. Tell me all about Boom Boom.
So 5 years ago, he and his wife, Michelle, moved from Milwaukee to Ashland looking for a new start. Oh, my God. How can I not acknowledge you just showed me a picture of this car, and it's kind of adorable. I never disliked the Pinto. I just am more of a Beetle. You know, I kind of like, it was like the Beetle's shape and everything. I mean,
oh, you're really attached to not being burned alive by your car?
Yeah, and I like more of a Hitler vibe in my vehicles. Right.
We got a weird vibe going today.
I know. It's a very not PC vibe.
Yeah. this whole I think I'm going to call this this episode Rutabaga. This is the one to just disregard.
Really?
No.
Okay, good, because otherwise I'll just stop. Why bother? So they came to Ashland from Milwaukee looking for a new start. Well, I don't know about you, but I could think of better places to land for a new start.
Yeah. I mean, just drawing like a radius circle around, like from Ashland to Milwaukee, and like what else would be the same distance. You got better. I'm not going to name names, but you got better options.
I'd say Chippewa Falls would be better.
Or like literally any. I mean,
yeah,
you know, there's Madison, Minneapolis, St. Paul, all of the greater Minneapolis, St. Paul suburbs.
Well, of course, Milwaukee. I mean, maybe they're looking for more of a small town vibe. You know, they've already been. So Ashland would fit that.
Right.
It fits a whole
Are they going from Milwaukee to Ashland or Ashland to Milwaukee?
Milwaukee to Ashland.
Oh, okay. I thought we were going the other way around.
Well, that'd be a bad idea, too.
Okay, yeah.
I mean, Milwaukee's like the last one I'd pick.
Yeah. I don't know. Ashland's not a terrible town.
Oh,
it's always pretty.
I know, but like...
It's very cold.
It's very cold, and that's where the Plywood Palace is, that bar where the guy burns down soft and he just builds it out of plywood, and his mom washes the mugs next door in her trailer. I don't know. He pees out back and then serves you a burger on the bar surface with nothing underneath it.
Yeah, it's Ashland.
Yeah, it's Ashland. So they moved there. Well, Raymond Boom Boom had been involved in crack cocaine abuse.
Boom Boom.
Boom Boom.
Well, it's, you know, like...
Boom Boom spending too much time in a room. But the significant part
I think Boom Boom is a victim of circumstance there.
Well, I would agree because the other problem is that he was involved in a Milwaukee area gang called the Spanish Cobras.
I can't decide if I love it or I think it's lame. Spanish Cobras.
Well, and on top of that...
Are they still around?
Yes.
Then I love it.
And on top of that, they're not only... The Spanish Cobras in 1992, they became the Insane Spanish Cobras.
ISC, Insane Spanish Cobras. I don't know if I like that new version as much.
Well, it was sort of as a way to... there was the Maniacs, was a different gang. So then they wanted to add something like even crazier than Maniac. So they became the Insane Spanish Cobras.
I think somebody needs to get in there and start workshopping names with these gangs.
So, I mean, listen to this, okay? The Cobras now are enemies with Maniacs and even almighty gangs like Imperial Gangsters, Simon City Royals, Latin Eagles, and Harrison Gents. Who left the Insanes a long time ago. Tuffy C took over as chief after King Cobra's...
Tuffy C?
T-U-F-F-Y? took over as chief.
He's like the most adorable gang member ever.
Tuffy C. After King Cobra's murder in 1979, but now it is said that the Cobras are ran by Crazy C. The Cobras are now very large in number and have sets in the suburbs and even other states.
Wait, is Tuffy the same guy as Crazy C?
No, Crazy C's a different guy.
Tuffy C and Crazy C.
Yeah,
they're
so
brothers.
They might be. So the location of the Insane Spanish Cobras were submitted by a, quote, member of this organization. I'm worried just being on this website. As a matter of fact, what am I doing? It's a bunch in Chicago and Illinois, but then it goes, oh, and then Flint, Michigan. Phoenix.
All right.
Kenosha, Madison, Milwaukee is known as Milltown.
Well, there's a lot of people don't understand the connection between Phoenix and Kenosha, you know, but there's a lot of ties between the two.
Shut up. I know you're joking, but sometimes you do this thing and I know it's not real.
Okay. Interesting. Interesting stance.
So that's the gang this guy came from. Yeah. All right. Now.
And so he's like, you know what? I'm like, the gang life is not for me. I want to make a clean start.
That's exactly.
I need a burger off a wood surface, like not on a plate.
That's what happens a lot, I think, with these gang guys. You know,
they're just like, you know what? Just give me, put me in a building made of plywood.
Just give me the gold Green Acres.
That just makes me real nervous if, like, I've got a cigarette or something.
I mean, outside the Plywood Palace is where I ran that marathon where this drunk guy was just standing there holding a sign that said, "You are my hero." Outside. And I'll never forget. He was just kind of like lopsided, you know, totally bombed with this handwritten marker on a sign. Looked like a piece of cardboard. So anyway, yes, he goes to Ashland to sever gang ties, get clean, help out his wife's two daughters who were both single mothers. So they were like, okay, we're going to go up here. We're going to help our family out. So once he got to Ashland, Raymond, who was 47, like only had some traffic tickets and a citation for having a nuisance dog or cat, which was probably like a dog barking or something like that, you know. So he had like a ton.
It's more fun to imagine nuisance cat.
I know. Oh my God. Did you see this video where this realtor was trying to do a walkthrough of a house and this cat would not let it leave this bedroom? It was like terrifying.
No, I haven't seen that.
Like she would try to walk and it would just like hiss and do this really terrible meowing. I've got mixed feelings on cats at times. Anyway, so he had a huge string of crimes in Milwaukee, so this was much better. And he had been clean since he got to Ashland. So, oh my. Well, he got into Jesus and preached a Christian gospel. He left behind a life and he told people, if I can get out, you can get out, which is not uncommon for people who make life changes, you know. Like, to find the Jesus and like an AA, stuff like that. So I can't really fault him for that. So, all right. He gets a job and he becomes a carrier for the Duluth News Tribune. And on Monday, and this would have been, the site. It's the Ashland paper. September 29th. So I bet it was on September 28th. He goes, does his paper route and... Oh, this site's not letting me scroll down. Come on. All right, here we go. And that's the last time anybody sees him. In Ashland. Okay, so if we can agree on... I mean, Ashland is a pretty... I mean, for up there, it's a big town. But it's not a big town.
It's what we like to call a county seat.
Yes, right. So, I mean, I don't know how many people are in Ashland off the top of my head, but it's not a very big place.
I feel like it's probably in the 10,000 range, maybe.
Maybe so it's maybe like than a. That.
I don't know. It's Ashland.
It's Ashland. I think that should be the name.
It's Ashland. It could be. I would believe it if you said 2,000 and 15,000.
Yeah, I mean. Population of Ashland. Let's just look at it.
Why are you actually typing that in? Didn't you? Don't you always use dictation?
Yeah, but dictation's been betraying me lately. Big time. 8,209.
I wasn't close enough without going out, whatever.
Yeah, but that feels about right. So this is a small town, by all accounts.
Yeah, small city.
Small city. So... he goes to do his paper out, and that's the time he's ever seen him. So on the Wednesday of the week he went missing in September, his wife goes on this page called the Ashland Area Small Town Crime Wave Facebook page.
I was really hoping you were going to say Facebook or Craigslist misconnections.
Oh, my God, a misconnection for her husband. That's this is quite an episode, isn't it? So she just asked, has anybody seen him? Because he's like a big guy. He has a lot of tattoos. You know, he's a Hispanic guy in Ashland who's like 300 pounds with a lot of like kind of prison looking tattoos. Okay, so
he doesn't I don't want to pass judgment on Ashland, but he's not going to blend into many crowds up there.
No. So she files a missing persons report. She goes to the hospital, sees if he's there. And, you know, she says this is totally out of character for him. She's afraid. The last time she spoke with him, there was no indication there was anything out of the ordinary. She said the Ashland Police Department's investigating his missing persons, but they really don't have anything to go on. The thing that really sucks is that this guy in 2008 had a really bad car accident. He broke his arm, his shoulder, but it also, he had like a traumatic brain injury. So he's very forgetful. But it's generally things like forgetting to bring home a loaf of bread, not forgetting where you, you know.
Why am I in Ashland? I don't live here. I live, wow, that's a real bummer that I ended up here.
Where's my...
I feel like I'm in a gang.
Where's my... I just don't... How far are we going to go with all this? Like where's my ISC? Insane Spanish Cobras. About the ISC.
I had kind of a bad day, and I cannot find my AK anywhere.
So, he does the route was like actual for income for them. So, I'm sure she's like, would you please come back and keep doing your paper route? Because I need that money. But anyway.
How am I going to support my lifestyle without that sweet, sweet paper route money?
I was wondering how long it would take for me to return to being able to do this, and it was not too long after you have a personal family tragedy and just could go right back to it. So here's what's weird. All right, this is at the end of September, so this is about a month ago. He had dark gray Honda Civic, license plate number.
This is an actual recent story?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
From September of this year.
Wow.
The end of September, yeah. License plate number ABU7748. She said that they had made a short trip to Milwaukee visiting relatives, and they came back the last week. I wonder if something occurred there, you know, or if somebody saw him or something that. Because he only had $20 on him, which wouldn't have even gotten him down there. And nobody in the Milwaukee area that they had contact with has seen him. I don't know if he's in a ditch somewhere, she said. I'm worried that he may have fallen in with a wrong crowd around here. So, in Ashland. But
like
his
car. Like a snowmobile gang? Like the... like the insane sledding. What was the last word? Cobras. The insane sledding cobras.
This was September 23rd.
Insane
this
sled
happened.
Cobras. You don't call it sledding. You call them sleds.
Yeah, you call them sleds. Yeah.
Insane. Take two. Tell me. Let me know when we start recording.
Insane.
I'm having a rough one.
Yeah, let's get off that. It's not going to work. Here's what's weird. This happened on the 23rd. I got to be serious about this just because this is an active thing. I mean, I'm being kind of funny about it, but ultimately I wanted to talk about this because I feel like this is one of those cases where we're just never going to find out what the hell, you know what I mean?
Right. Because I don't want to say this, and I'm not making light or I really don't want to make fun, you know, or whatever, but like, This is a case where, like the victim or the missing person is not like an adorable, sweet looking,
right?
You know, I mean, this is, you know, but that doesn't, and that's the thing that the media and I think a lot of people like. They're attracted to those things because they make you feel things, you know, like when it's like a sweet, adorable looking and boy or girl, you know, when they go missing, you really, you know, feel that more acutely, I think. And, but the, you know, this guy who, you know, had a sketchy past, who doesn't look the way, society expects people to look, has no less value to his family and the people around him.
Right.
So, you know, one could argue that all missing persons deserve the same level of attention when it comes to trying to find them.
Yes. I would agree.
Look at me being all earnest and shit for a second.
Yeah, I just... You definitely could be a cult leader. Yeah. I was just like on board. Good thing it was reasonable and nice what you were saying.
Well, I do genuinely feel that way, you know.
Yeah, me too.
I think, you know, something like children, especially, I think are a little tougher. You know, because they're like this guy, a full grown adult, you know, probably is more capable and prepared to care for himself.
Mm-hmm.
But him being missing, like, obviously he, you know, has a lot of value too. Like he's supporting his family, you know. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's interesting.
Yeah.
And I think you're right that he probably won't be found just simply because, you know, we're not going to have Amber Alerts or whatever,
right.
You know, like we're not going to have like a you know, there probably isn't going to be a 2000 person manhunt or evidence hunt or whatever that, you know?
Yeah.
You know, he's not going to have 2000 volunteers showing up to look for stuff.
Well, and what sucks is that he went missing on the 23rd of September in this Honda Civic. And he had two phones, and they were both shut off the day he went missing.
So, yeah, can't really, not much to go off there.
And then you wonder what the, was this something, somebody shut those off, or did he mean to be gone? Or did he have to be on the run for some
right.
reason?
And that's also the thing with adults, and we dealt with this with the... you know, it's one of the barriers to the Shannon Boytel case is that adults have the right to be missing. You know, he could just have chosen to leave. And, you know, like if not that you ever would, but if you chose to leave Tyler, you know, like what, you know, like you have like, what kind of force would you want mobilized to try to track you down?
Right. There.
It's probably going to be the other way around, by the way. So maybe we should bring Tyler on and ask him that question. What kind of force would you be comfortable with having mobilized searching for you in the event you try to disappear?
Hey, I'll have it be known. I'm not going to even defend myself on this one. I'll let my actions speak for themselves.
Okay,
so I'll post some information on that case, and there's a little missing flyer we can put up. And I have the Ray of Sunshine this week.
Hit me.
It's a game called 221B Baker Street.
I've heard of that.
Oh my God, it's fantastic. There are 200 cases, and it can be played 2 to 6 players, and you can either play cooperatively or against each other. And it comes with a board, and you have your token. You can pick some kind of Sherlocky token, and then you each get a sheet that has the names of all of these locations on the board. And you roll, you get a case, you read the case, and then it says the game is afoot. Or whatever at the end.
Oh, sure. This is why I know that the title of that game, that's Sherlock Holmes's address.
Yes, it's Sherlock Holmes's address. So you hear the case, you have to figure out, it will tell you who, you know, whatever you're supposed to, different cases have different things you need to solve in regards to it. Then you go around the board to all of these different, the hotel, the pub, and you get collect clues. And then once you think you figured it out, you have to get back to 221B Baker Street and give, say what you think happened. And if you're wrong, then the other person gets to continue. And, you know, if there's more than one other player.
Is it sort of like Clue?
It's not, because Tyler was really afraid of it being like Clue because he's not like the biggest fan of Clue, but it requires, it's different every time. And you get a key and you get a Scotland Yard badge so you can go into some rooms or some places and lock it so that your opponent has to use their key.
Okay.
How do I explain it? What you have to figure out in every case is different. Some are way more complicated than others. Some send you on wild goose chases of clue, like, okay, here's part of this answer. You got to go to the pub way over there to get the next one. Then you get there and they're like, oh, just kidding. There was no real clue. So you get fooled and then you have to sort of try and like not let your opponent know what kind of clue you got in there, because you don't want them to, if it's a really good one, you don't want them to figure it out. And then it's super fun to have to race back, you know, to 221B Baker Street and solve it. But like one game can take easily an hour or, you know.
So when you visit each location, do you get the same clue as the other person? Okay.
Yeah. And so you have this book, these books that have, you get the story on a card and on the back it has a list of the locations and each one has a number, and then you go to the book and they're scattered everywhere so you can't like just look at every clue for one case. Like one will be on number 116, one will be number 6.
Okay.
So you get your clue, and yes, if your opponent goes to that same room, they'll get the same clue, but you don't, sometimes you really don't want them to do that because you're like, God damn it, this was a really, I know what the motive is and I don't want them to come to the pub and figure it out. So we have goddamn loved this game. Like, it's really fun. If you have any, it's just much more, you have to use your brain more than in Clue. Clue is more of a process of elimination to me.
Sure. Yeah.
This is more like you have to, the clues sometimes are like word games and things you have to guess, or you have to get some sort of cultural reference to guess what they're talking about to make a word and stuff.
Okay.
So I highly recommend it.
Okay.
Yep. That's my Ray of Sunshine.
I like it. November 19th, we are going to be on a stage talking at your face live with BJ Hollers.
Yes. I think that's... if there's anything else coming up.
There will be another movie night coming up in November.
Oh, good.
I haven't set a date for it yet. I will keep you posted. But it's going to be Thanksgiving themed, and we are watching Thanksgiving, a movie about a murderous turkey.
That sounds great.
There's not to spoil the next couple of years around Thanksgiving time, but there are a couple of sequels as well.
And this isn't something like Gobble Gobble Motherfucker or
yes,
something like that?
That's the tagline, is Gobble Gobble Motherfucker.
Have a weird week.